Now let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes.
Well, welcome back, Stocky Jacks. I'm Tom Ollie. This is Dave Scatina back from around the world trip. Well, to Florida anyway. S&P futures down 950, NASDAQ futures down 113. Dow futures, I believe, are up. Let me find out here for sure. I'm reading about Tiger Woods. So I can't believe everybody wants to charge the poor guy, for God's sake. It was an accident. Anyway, Dow's up a little bit. Was up 424 yesterday. Today, it is up. It's down 2. It was just up 2. So it's flat, say the Dow. Do we have Lou? Evidently, we do not yet. We got Lou? We sort of did.
There we are.
Hi, Lou. How are you?
Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you. I have to got to give me a few minutes here to talk about this wacky close last night. I don't know if you spotted any of it, but just one of the stocks in one of my clients is trading pretty heavily. It's just Nokia, right? Because we had a position in. I mean, the market exists to piss you off sometimes, Lou. It seems like
sure
we had in the midst of all the craziness with the Reddit stuff when Nokia was up. I managed to buy this calendar spread for like 4 cents, right? Which is pretty darn cheap. So it was the 4 put spread. So when the stack opens up, you know. It's
by the way, that you just referenced another one of the Stocks and Jacks fund investment terms that remind me of, you know, a porn site,
yes.
A calendar spread, and I was about to say, yeah, I have a collection of Playboys that feature that
calendar spreads. Yes, yes,
yes.
God. So I say, okay, it's only 4 cents.
My mind, quite frankly, should not be there at 5 a.m. But when you drop terms like that, that's where we go.
What time of day should it be there? Is there a specific time?
I should at least be a little more awake.
Ah, all right. God. Yeah. Anyway, so I said, all right, I'll just sit with these things. Market, you know, these stacks don't look so hot. So I sit with my 4 cent puts for like 2 weeks. Stacks 406, 405, 404, 403. There's no volatility whatsoever in these things. The stack's like 403 2 days before expiration and the puts are like at a penny. You know, so there's no chance of this thing going under four. So I basically eat the 4 cents. Monday morning, of course, the thing is 385. You know, after, you know, just to aggravate the piss out of you. So then, one of my clients decides, well, he wants to trade the thing to the upside. So he buys a bunch of calls. Sure, the thing's creeping up. So he sells some others against them, which you should do. So last night, the calls are like 10, 11. He says, well, sell me some at 12. So we put the order in and, somehow or another we get filled at 12. I mean, The markets are kind of crazy. If you want to do something, you definitely put the order in because the markets are moving all over the place. And sometimes, if you have an order in, you're the only real order there, right? So we get filled at 12, even though the darn things are at 11. Which, you know, I could talk for months, Lou, as you know, about how crummy the market structure is now. Even though the congressman can't seem to figure it out. So all of a sudden, couldn't have been 10 minutes later. The calls go out 18:19 that we just brilliantly sold at 12. And I'm looking at the stack. The stack's still 403 and it's trading. So the client calls up and he goes, well, if the calls are 18 cent bid, see if you can buy the stack down here. And then I says, there's no way on earth we can buy the stack down here. But we try anyway. We get filled at 402, even though the thing's 403 bid, right? I mean, don't even begin to think that all our fills are like this, but. So all of a sudden, the guy buys all these shares at 402. So later on, we go have a drink. You know who this guy is. And the stock's trading like 416 or something. Like, what is going on here? And meanwhile, GameStop, after being sleepy for now 3-4 weeks, after all the big run-up and everything, is up like 50 bucks. And now GameStop, I've got the darn thing, is up. Get a load of this. I think it's trading up $100. And let me get the exact number up here. I just was looking at the graph, chart, as the chartist would say. It's up 67 bucks, trading 159. It was like 42 a couple days ago. Now, Lou, just for you, we'll be brief with this because I know you got other stuff to talk about. I start digging into the GameStop fundamentals. Now, these guys got 70 million shares outstanding, right? And of course, they've bought some of their stuff back in for reasons unknown, because at some point they were out to like almost 100 million shares outstanding. So a stock is up $100, say, at 69, say, call it 70 million shares outstanding. It's $7 billion of market cap last night at 2:55 or 3 o'clock, including this morning. Well, so to say, this morning and last night. Look, what the bleep? And then I dig up the other page here for their earnings, right? Well, there aren't any. The last quarter last year, they lose $18 million. Quarter before, they lose $119 million.
Yeah, that's why they were a target.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, why would anybody value a stock at $7 billion like that? Well, 70 million times now 161. So we're pushing $10 billion on this thing. Who the hell would pay $10 billion for this piece of Duke? And I mean, I'm not telling anybody to sell it. I'm not telling anybody, because the market's obviously run over. But this is what happens when you have three or four players in a market and you decide you launch everybody else out of the system. But you know, the funny part, Lou, and you're my psychologist as well as my attorney sometimes. Every topic we talk about, everything, no matter what it is, whether it's COVID, whether it's the market, whether it's baseball, whether it's football, it's the exact same crap. It's a few companies manage to weasel their way in, whether they're the only people around, whether they can do the job or not, doesn't seem to make any difference. Just money gets poured at them, and the rest of the people are just left holding the bag like a bunch of schlumps. And I'm kind of tired of being one of the schlumps. You know, I ran into some lady last week, not that I was ever in an adult emporium, and she's working for the airlines. She's still getting paid. Not unemployment, she's getting paid as a flight attendant. Now, does that mean that the chairman of the company is getting his same millions of dollars, even though the place... I mean, are we paying these... I mean, look at Boeing yesterday was up like $15-16. Look, they just had an engine fall off. They've got three of the worst contracts between the 737, 400 planes on the ground, and the 787 now. That's all screwed up, too. Don't they have something wrong with that thing, or a bunch of things wrong with it? That everybody's investigating that thing. Now, an engine falls off the set, or not falls off, but damn near falls off the 777, and the stock goes up.
Parts of the engine fell off.
So the thing, I mean, are we, the people who are so in Dutch with our government, they're getting so much money to get, how the hell does a chairman of Boeing get his regular paycheck, for God's sake?
I don't know that he is, but I mean, this is part of the issue with the so-called COVID relief bill. And it's one of the reasons why there was, or is a fight in Congress right now over the spending. Something like 90% of that bill is devoted to payments to things other than, you know, check COVID money, monetary relief for people who are who are hurting right now.
Well, it's for the favored
companies.
People.
And I can understand the necessity of keeping, or the desire to keep certain businesses operating, because of their fundamental impact on our employment and our economy. And the airlines are one of them. But the amount of pork that's stuffed in there and the amount of just non-COVID-related stuff is amazing. People need to be called on it. And it's one of those bills that just, you look at it and it looks like the Congress is just saying, you know what, we'll just print more money to cover this.
Well, that's what they've been doing. I mean,
I know.
Well, Lou, even I grew up on the South Side, so did David. You get the feeling that even if in the worst of times, even the mob would lay off.
No, these guys don't.
No, they don't. I mean,
and that's a good point. Well, I go back to that article that I referenced a couple of weeks ago in Tablet Magazine, talking about why we. You know, why people like Donald Trump are going to continue to get elected, or at least make a legitimate run at national office, because the fix is in. Maybe the fix has always been in. You think the fix has always been in. I sort of tend to agree with you on that. But the discussion in that Tablet article was really straightforward, and it said, look, we have gotten in bed with our elites, our elects, whatever you want to call them, have gotten in bed with this kind of global outlook, global culture that just says, you know what, we're going to take care of ourselves, We don't owe any particular allegiance to any country. We're going to take care of ourselves to the extent that we can manipulate, the electoral process or the dictatorial process within companies. We are going to do so to benefit us. And that's what's going on. What do you think that the delay on opening schools is in any way related to anything other than teacher unions saying we want our people to continue to be able to stay at home, do a minimal amount of work, and get money?
Oh, no, there's no question that's what it is.
Yeah,
I mean, individual teachers, Lou. My nephew is married to a terrific lady. She's a teacher. And she says, I can't wait to get back in class. It's harder. She goes, if you actually do the job, and she didn't speculate on how many people are actually doing it, is if you're actually doing the job, teaching mathematics from home is way harder in the classroom. She goes, I can't wait to get back.
This is sort of one of my topics. I think that what we're seeing with regard to the school issue, and this is something obviously that's going to resonate with people around the country parents around the country who have kids that are now stay at home, who've basically lost a year of schooling and who are isolated and lonely and are having all kinds of other social issues. The parents can't go back to work full time because they've got to babysit the kids, and they're looking around going, where's the science on this? We've got all kinds of people saying it's okay to send the kids back to school, whatever, and now you've got the teachers' unions coming in, and I say unions. The NEA is extremely powerful within the Democratic Party, or at least it's powerful within the people making the decisions in the Democratic Party. The NEA and other local unions saying, you know what, we've changed our mind. It's now not just vaccinations, and it's now not just positive cases. We need to rebuild our schools physically, because a lot of them don't have good ventilation or sufficient ventilation or are not optimized for social distancing. So now we want you to completely we need a full construction budget to rebuild every deficient school building, and we'll tell you what those are, every deficient school building in the country. I mean, it is a never ending grab.
Well, and you're gonna have 25 construction guys all over that.
Of course. So this is another reason why, A, I'm generally against public sector unions, and B, I'm particularly against particularly opposed to the kinds of things that we see the NEA and other education unions operating, the way in which they're operating. And so I'm hoping that we're going to be looking at a fundamental change in American education culture, specifically in the way that schools are being financed. You're starting to see a push now in places, it's sort of outlier states, but it's going to get more centralized, a push to fund students rather than funding school districts. So in other words, we're going to put X amount of money.
You're not going to do that. You're never going to get there.
It could create issues. But it's going to put a lot of pressure on local school districts okay, we've got to up our game, because they're going to lose kids anyway. And you're better off, and it's more equitable to be able to lose kids across an economic spectrum than it is just to have the people who can afford to bolt the school system do so.
Other than the people who listen to the show and you and me and the other contributors, who gives a rat's behind whether something is equitable, Lou?
Well, if you're a government official, you want it to at least appear to be equitable, because otherwise you're not going to get reelected.
They do all the time. I'm just trying to make good radio here. I'm with you on this, but
no, I understand. I understand what you're saying. But look at Chicago.
Okay, look at one of the most. Back up a little bit, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Well, you grew up in Canada for a while, correct?
Correct.
I was actually there for half a school year, first grade. In Canada, in those days, now I believe that it's still the case today, wherever school you go to, if it is accredited, your chunk of cash that goes to you, the student, follows you to the school you go to. And if it's Catholic or
I believe that's true in some provinces.
Okay,
I don't think it's universally true.
Okay, it was true in Toronto. So so if you want to add to it, because we went to actually a brand new Catholic school at the time, I was in first grade, so I didn't know that much what was going on, but basically that's what happened. Now you'll never get that. The little bit of money they give charter schools in Chicago, they're never not under attack from the Chicago public schools.
Oh, I know.
And they think it's perfect.
Hilarious.
They think it's perfectly equitable for you and I to pay taxes in Chicago for education, have our kids go to Catholic school and not benefit from a dime of that. And it's going to the other. They think that's perfectly equitable.
It's even worse.
But economically, Lou, it comes down to, we had one of the few times I ever had a guest, I mean, in fact, probably the only time, that we really didn't hit it off was a dude from, other than David Stockman, who'd give a 20-minute dissertation without taking a breath, which I don't know how anybody does that. Even though the name was great, the guest was terrible. One of those deals.
Yes.
This guy comes down, he's the head of the public pension fund, teacher's pension fund in Chicago. Now, in Chicago, you know this, but I'll just say real quickly, the people of Chicago get screwed on their teacher's fund. Because your taxes to the state, you're essentially paying for teachers downstate. And the people in Chicago have a separate pool. So you're paying for the Chicago pool, and you're also paying for the other pool, which really does suck. But of course that's Illinois. But the guy was at, and basically he and I butted heads pretty seriously, and I said, well, I understand how stuff is quote fair. You know, the 3% cost of living or 5%, whatever the teacher's been getting every year. I said, I would not begrudge that to anybody, except for the fact that the people that are paying it aren't getting the same raise. And just, if you do the math, you run into problems if you extend it at all. I said, I just don't know how, the last person standing in Illinois better have a lot of money. And basically the guy said, I don't care. It's up to the state to get as much money out of the rest of the people to pay for my people. And when I see, Joe Biden, and I don't know if the guy ever balanced a checkbook in his life, but I'm not saying he's a bad person or anything like that, but the things he's doing, who the hell, when your income went up a little bit last year, if you start paying everybody at United Airlines their regular paychecks for like a year, you start paying everybody at Boeing billions of dollars, so no matter what they do, no matter how they screw up their programs, they're going to come out smelling like a rose. And nobody misses a paycheck at that kind of money. When the rest of the world is getting unemployment, right, which is a lot different, how the hell do you expect the rest of the society make up for essentially 4 years of taxation this year you've pissed away? And there's no way that anybody's going to let this COVID thing die. We're going to be making bazillion masks at whatever price somebody can get out of the government 2 years from now, even if we don't even need them. I mean,
there's at least one credible report that a major investor in COVID relief in business is Hunter, and so I'm expecting that's going to come out somewhere and probably be ignored by mainstream.
Your job is attorneying and other stuff. $160 billion. For COVID relief, I can't even imagine that kind of money, really, Lou. But what I know is it's darn near the entire government spending in the year 2000. I mean, that was 170. I mean, we're talking about how many masks? Who the hell's finger is in that pie, and why isn't mine and yours and David's?
Well, I know. So again, this goes back to a fundamental difference in terms of the view of the function of government. For a lot of people that are making these decisions, their view of government is the government's job is to redistribute income, specifically redistribute it to them, their friends, and people sympathetic to their causes. And the rest, everybody else can make do. But
you can't.
They justify it on the grounds of some kind of social inequity that the government has to remedy.
But Lou, their calculator has to add the same way as yours and mine. I mean, there has to be somebody on this earth other than you and me that says, okay, let's see. The Trump administration, I'll give them, you know, I'll give them criticism where I think they deserve it, and I'll give them kudos. They negotiated deals with 7 companies for vaccines somewhere between $11 and $19 a shot. Let's be charitable. Let's say 20. God's sake, Lou, a billion shots is 20 billion. Where's the other 140 going?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's going somewhere. It's not going. This was the point of my earlier comment that a lot of that money is not going for relief. It's going to, God knows what. Wuhan. Well, part of it, I think, is going to Wuhan for their viral studies. A part of it's going to the World Health Organization. I mean, we're funding all kinds of things with that bill that arguably do not benefit, the guy in the street who's been out of work for 10 months.
Well, but it's but the weird part, Lou, and you and I, we agree, but we're always kind of on different levels of the chessboard with Kirk and Spock playing. The thing of it is, I don't see how the hell you can expect to take these high-end industries, the Boeings, the Uniteds, the airline, and give them really like $15 billion to airplanes. Who the hell, and expect the people that are laid off to pay for that? Where does that money come from exactly when you're laid off, for God's sake?
Oh, well, we're just, as you said, we know that we're printing it. That's where it's coming from. Where the value is coming from is another story, but the money itself is actually being printed.
Well, you had your chairman, and when is, as you know, Lou, I have trouble. I'm one of these guys that almost wants to kick a spider outside before I step on him. I mean, that's how violent I am. But I tell you what, I've watched his performance of Powell the last couple of days. He is going right in the face of hundreds of years of economic theory, economic practical stuff, evidence. And he basically told the Congress, why do you think the market's up this much in 2 days? We've had an incredible spin in the last 48 hours. He basically told Congress, I don't care what you guys are thinking in your districts, whether you think there's inflation, whether there isn't. I'm printing money here, and we're sending it to where we feel like sending it. And by the way, if it's inflationary, so what? We'll deal with it later. And you know what, Lou? If all of a sudden, the people that are going to be harmed by this, which will be millions and millions of people, at some point, do we get to take these guys and put them on a ship with fuel for halfway or what? I mean, you know, I'm not, or at least get them out of office.
No, there's no accountability for this. There's no accountability even for things that are going to happen recently, and the impact of these decisions won't be felt for years. Within the last 10 months, we've had people making terrible, stupid calls on COVID, on economic incentives, on teacher unions, making just one bad call after another, and there's no accountability. You know that.
Lou, how does somebody with it we pay? I don't care if you or I or David decides to be a buffoon and jump up in front of a bunch of people and say it's really nighttime when it's daytime. Knock yourself out. I mean, we get to do that. That's America. I don't want to be paying the guy to do that, and I'm doing it. I mean, I don't want to pay a guy to lie to me. I mean, anybody who thinks, I mean, look at the last 2 days, we've had our buffoonish Treasury Secretary talking to Congress that there is no inflation, that transitory, Lou, whatever the hell that means. Yet yesterday, I'm listening, waiting for Maddie Weber in the alley, the price of new cars last year was 6.5% higher, used cars 11.4. The average price of a new car now is appreciably higher than the median income of the average American. For God's sake, Lou.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not even on the same planet as we were 20 years ago.
Well, this is going to be ongoing, and again, I hearken back to, whatever crappy public policy decision you care to name, whether it was Vietnam or I'm trying to think of one during the Reagan years. The end of Gulf War I, the start of Gulf War II, or. You know, whatever. When you have decisions being made by ideologues, and I think that's what's happening in the Biden administration right now, almost all the decisions are being made by ideologues. You know, reality doesn't matter. They don't they don't see the reality that, that you and I see with relatively clear lenses in front of our eyes. They see reality through this ideological position that says, this is the way things should be, and therefore I can get them there with these public policy decisions. And it, you know, whether it goes bad or not, at least initially, doesn't register.
But how do they not understand that the guys around them that allegedly agree with them are only there for the money? They don't agree with them.
I don't know. I mean, I think you do have a tremendous segment in the sort of American business community, the elects within the sphere of influence of the decision makers. You have people who are sitting there saying, okay, let's figure out how we can make money off of it.
Well, I mean, you could, I mean, I know you're as honest as they come, but it's real hard for anybody that has, you know, a family and people you have to service, when I say service, make sure they eat and have a place to live. It's real hard to say, God, that expressway is a really stupid idea. And I go, shut up, Lou. We're getting the contract for the concrete.
That's exactly.
It's very South Side. Wait a minute, we get the concrete, you idiot. Shut up.
That's another reason I'm opposed to the public sector unions, because that's exactly the decision making mentality you see.
Let's go to break here, Lou, and then we'll take your topics for sure. We come back, because I've been monopolizing, unfortunately. SP Futures down 8, NASDAQ Futures down 100. The trading last night got me going crazy, Lou, so it got me started before we even got on. So what can I say? Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P futures down 875. NASDAQ futures down 103. Except for a big rally yesterday. Dow futures are actually up 13. Individual stocks in the Dow. I got Goldman Sachs up 281. I got Johnson & Johnson up 238. As their vaccine is about ready to, I think it approved yesterday or the day before. We got Microsoft down again, 180. Microsoft and Apple are the ones that have been getting clobbered the last few weeks. Apple still, even though it had a big day yesterday, 124, it topped out at like 145 a few weeks ago, so it's down, well, pushing 18%. Around the rest of the world, we've got the DAX down 28.2%, so pretty flat. FTSE up 26.4%. CAC around up 6, call that flat, so not much going on over there. Asia, which has been up and down, especially like the Hang Seng. Nikkei up 496, 1.7%. Shanghai up 20.6%. Hang Seng was down yesterday somehow. It's now up today, 355. So they're all over the place. South Korea is up 3%. So the money is entering the system, shall we say. As a review yesterday, Dow up 424. That's 1.3%. S&P futures up 44, 1.1. NASDAQ up 132. That's 1%. And they're actually almost down that same amount today already. As I say, the apples of the world and the Microsofts are the ones that have been sinking here. Bonds, get a load of this. 144. Lou, I made the outrageous prediction of 150 by Labor Day and 2 by, 150 by Memorial Day and 2 by Labor Day, and I'm gonna be so short on that, as bizarre as it seemed when I said it. Here's one. Get a load of this. The Bund, minus 0.25. Japan, positive 0.14. Transitory, I believe the term is, Jay Powell said. Oil up 33 cents, 63.55. Brent up 32, 67.36. Natural gas up 3, 283. RBOB is at 189. So much for 235 gas for a while. Gold, this is the most bizarre thing, though. Gold cannot go up. There must be a liquidator someplace. I wonder if it's our guys not wanting gold to go up. A gold down 960, 1788. It's like the storehouse of inflation. It's the only one that's not moving. Silver up 16, 2809. Copper up another 4 cents, 433. That's been the one that has moved. Nobody seems to care about copper. It was the best buy of the last 12 months by far. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. The Bulls.
The Bulls. Good morning. It's 636 in Chicago. Traffic this morning. Highways have been running smoothly. Traffic's building normally. I do have an incident on Lower Wacker Drive. There was a multi-vehicle accident at Wacker Drive in Garvey Court. The weather today.
Nobody stops for that red light. Nobody.
Nobody. Weather today, not a bad day in Chicago, 30 and clear. It's going to be 40 and sunny today. For our Phoenix listeners, 50 and clear today with a high of 72, full sunshine. To sports, NBA, our Bulls beat the Timberwolves in OT, 133-126. The Suns lose to the Hornets, 124-121. In NCAA play, DePaul loses number 12, Creighton, 77-53. Illinois takes on Nebraska tonight. Northwestern plays Minnesota tonight. And in Arizona, Washington at ASU and Washington State at Arizona. Baseball spring training this weekend. We have a slew of games. Sox, Milwaukee, Cubs, Padres, Arizona, Colorado. Back to you, Chief.
Lou, I have a question. Because you're a guy who likes to, you're a wordsmith. When your Treasury, when your Fed chief comes out and says inflation will be transitory, just on strict definition, I asked somebody yesterday, does that mean if we have a bulge in used car prices last year of 11% or whatever it was, and now this year, if the inflation stops, does that mean it goes back down, or they sit there up 11% and you don't get a raise and you just go onward from there?
I would guess that he's saying they are transitory. I would guess that he's meaning that there will be fluctuation in the inflation rate. I don't necessarily think it's going to be, you know, down all the time, but I think it's going to be, I would say that the rate of inflation is not going to stay consistent. That's what I think he's trying to say. But by calling it transitory, He's trying to convince or make the impression that the inflation effect is just going to be passing and will not be permanent, which you and I know is wrong.
I would say they'd be, and Janet Yellen said the same thing. I think they're telling you it would be a short-term phenomenon, but I guess my question is, because I'm Mr. Numbers Knucklehead, in the last 6 months or something, I've read different stories that the price of lumber has essentially doubled.
Yep.
Now, does that mean it comes back down to where it was, or it just sits there doubled and forever?
I'm following this because I'm doing some having some work done that on our house. I think it's going to come back down, but not where it was before.
From your lips to God's ears, bud, because I don't.
Yeah.
All right. So will you? Go ahead.
Let me start with a topic that should hit near and dear to your heart, and that is monopoly. Although in this case, it's going to be a government business monopoly, which, as you know all too well from talking to me, is effectively fascism.
Yep.
It's astounding to me. The energy, the House Committee on Energy, and I believe Communications, is holding hearings and subpoenaed the heads of the various cable networks, Comcast, Apple, anybody that carries Turner Broadcasting, anybody that carries bundle packages or provides sort of generic cable services, they're being subpoenaed to appear before Congress and answer questions in front of this, again, Democrat-led committee as to why they are allowing Fox News, OANN, and other networks that are not towing the mainstream media line with regard to news stories, why they are allowing those networks to be carried on their cable systems.
You gotta be kidding me.
No, I'm not. And if you want to see something really chilling, you could pull up the letter that was sent by two California congressmen to these entities, basically asking them why you allow these news services to continue to come on your channel, and how do you justify, literally asking, how do you justify allowing Fox News to continue on your cable network? And it is, it's as blatant an attempt to shut down dissenting news media and dissenting views with government threats as I've ever seen. And if you read the letter, this is nothing, or this is way past anything I ever saw, where Trump complained about news media or whatever, referred to them as the enemy of the people one time. This is way past that.
The tone of these
subpoenas is, nice cable network you've got there. It would be too bad if something were to happen to it.
It sounds like the mob.
It's very interesting to see this. And again, the press, the mainstream press, is not jumping on this because obviously it hits at their competitors. And so we've got this, what I refer to as the unholy alliance of a private business interest with the government, and basically their interests are aligned. We're going to shut down competition to our network, and we're going to do it through our buddies in the government. And if that's not the quintessential definition of fascism, I don't know what.
Well,
it is.
When did just in general, is I've never been all that crazy about politics my whole life, but I was a Democrat, but I was a Paul Simon, Adlai Stevenson Democrat. I'm not this group.
I call myself a Scoop Jackson Democrat, and I don't know if Jackson was.
Yeah. What state was he?
Senator from Washington State.
Right.
Pretty good guy. Pretty thoughtful guy.
Well, you get guys like Dan Inouye, people like that. You could easily follow those guys, right?
Sure, Moynihan.
Yeah.
Yep.
So my question is, and if anybody talked about any semblance of tyranny, you would have thought it would have come from the right, the neocons and those kinds of people.
Sure.
But when did that all change? Because it clearly has. The tyranny is coming from the left now. What people can hear, what they can say, what's proper, those kinds of things. The tyranny in your personal space is absolutely coming from, removing this kind of statue, removing this from history. That's all coming from the left. When did that start? When did those, those people take over that party from me and you?
Well, I don't know. I don't know when the Democrats officially became beholden to critical race theory and the critical theory kind of worldview that we see dominating a lot of their efforts. But it certainly started coming out of college campuses in the late 1980s. And of course, at the time, there were people on the right saying, you need to keep an eye on what's happening on California campuses and a number of other campuses on the East Coast and in Michigan, because this mentality is starting to permeate academia. And it will eventually work its way out of academia and into the mainstream as these people, as, you know, adherence to this philosophy graduate from these schools and work their way into leadership positions. And so we see this last week, the incredible spectacle of a training program at Koch that was posted up on LinkedIn that says, you know, you need to be less white. And I've talked about this previously.
Oh, I saw that, degrees of whiteness.
Yeah. This mentality runs counter not just to everything that I think most Americans believe with respect to identity politics, which is, look, we want to be neutral on the subject. We should be treating everybody the same, regardless of these protected characteristics, and give everybody the same opportunity. The new push is absolutely the opposite of that, which is we consider your protective factor. Race is the big one right now, but it's everything.
But not really, because we don't need
a protective factor in every single decision we make about you, about your access to vaccines, about your access to health care, about your access to jobs, promotions, all of that. It should all be considered.
My view of race relations, I'd be tossed. My question is, I absolutely believe virtually everything that Martin Luther King said. When's he going to get tossed?
Well, his view of judging people by the content of their character and not by their skin color is now at least officially rejected by the critical theorists, and I think has worked its way now into the mainstream corporate America. Certainly, it's present in probably 80% of people teaching in colleges right now, that this mindset. And the ones that aren't are afraid of expressing opinions because they're afraid they'll get mobbed. And to the extent that the leadership of schools and businesses embrace this philosophy, you lose your job, you lose your ability to earn a livelihood. But I want to go back to this ridiculous message from this congressional committee and these congressmen. But you talked about antitrust. You know, I don't think you or I contemplated that the antitrust push would be an illegal combination of government and business.
It clearly is.
That's what you're seeing here. You're seeing a bona fide attempt to shut down dissenting views. It's happening, obviously it's happened on Twitter and Facebook. We know now from that Time magazine article that was orchestrated as part of the election campaign in favor of or against Trump, in favor of Biden. The idea that we would repress dissenting views on social media, shut down the ability of people to get their message, their message out. The only time I've seen something like this was, I believe it was the 1994 elections in Russia, where Yeltsin was running against a Russian nationalist, and I've dumped his name now. I forget it. In any event, the guy he was running against was a great Russian nationalist and racist who basically talked about running all the minorities out of Russia. Anybody that wasn't Russian shouldn't be able to get a job.
Is this when it was still the USSR?
Pardon me?
This was after the USSR.
Right, right. So this was, and the Russian press, which at that point was basically unfettered, simply said, you know what, we're going to collude together and we're not going to cover this guy. We're not going to show up at his press briefings. We're not going to go to his rallies. As far as we're concerned, collectively, he's going to be a non-person.
Well, if you have a competitive press, people should be able to do that. But if you have a non-competitive press, that's a problem.
Well, that's it. I mean, a competitive press, there would be competitors out there saying, well, you guys can do what you want, but we're going to cover it.
Right.
This was a collusion on the part of the Russian press, the main Russian press entities, saying we're going to just simply not give this guy a way to get his message out. That's comparable to what you saw with Twitter and Facebook and Reddit in the fall. what they're simply turning off the spigot on news that was damaging to Biden or to the Democrats.
You know what I'm going to say? Somebody that started, Lou, and you being a military guy, you're going to be pissed off at me here, but you know what I'm going to say? A lot of this started, what you just talked about is things you couldn't say. If you look at me looking at it versus you, but I used to research some of this stuff, and Eisenhower talked about it when he left, the bleep that he was in some ways. It's not, I love it when you say, when you're walking out the door, the manager, by the way, this team sucks. Okay, you were the manager. Why didn't you do something when you were here? But he talked about the military industrial establishment. The amount, if you were to go back, and I read a couple of them because I don't know, somebody had some professor was all into this. If you were to look at the news that was given the population here in the U.S. and the senators and the representatives regarding Russian military capability, always in an effort to get a new plane or a new something, Lou, it was all wrong. I mean, they had the Russians with intercontinental jet bombers like 15 years before they did, you know, type of thing. It was totally managed news for the extent that those people get more contracts to build more planes and stuff. I mean, that's the first time I saw something like that happen.
Well, come on, Chief, reach back to the coverage of the Vietnam War. After say 1968, it was impossible to get any kind of balanced coverage out of the three major networks
By the way, the same schools you named about this new mentality were the places that were the hotbeds of anti-Vietnam movements.
Oh, I know. Michigan was and Wisconsin and the East Coast elite schools, sure.
But everybody, as time went by, your population knew that war was absurd. In terms of what we were trying to accomplish, nothing. The amount of people were dying. We start talking about, we fought today and 10 of our guys died, 100 of those guys died. Over what? Some plateau in Vietnam we don't even care about? I mean, it got to the point
that reflected a lousy strategy. And again,
right. Oh yeah.
The if you read David Halberstam's book, The Best and the Brightest, you get a feel for the fact that these people were ideologues, and they were looking at the world not with a reality but from their ideology that said, look, if we do A, then B is going to be the automatic result, and we'll see this kind of response from you know, the Vietnamese people and whatever. Or if we don't do A, then B is going to be the automatic result, and it really reflected a fundamental misunderstanding of why the war was being fought, number one. But number two, it reflected, I think, the complete failure of those people, much like the second Iraq war, to assess what are we going to call victory and what is our ultimate goal here. And this lack of goals, and the U.S. military was complicit in this, by the way.
Oh, sure.
They should have gone forward and demanded, look, let's get us a metric as to when we win. But part of the problem with that is if you don't really understand the nature of the people you're going up against, your metric of when you win, even if you can define one, is not going to be worth anything.
Well, you remember Kathy Durbin used to be on the show with us?
Yep.
Kathy would dig stuff out. I don't know. She has amazing talent for digging up stuff. She sent me this thing one day, Lou. This is how what you're talking about, the metric and the military and the mistakes were made. But then it continues to evolve into now, just as you're talking about, well, what are we going to do with this money? Now, huge push for third injection for other strains of the virus. So now we're going to have to pay probably $50 for that shot, right? I mean, this is never going to end. But I'm saying is, so she gets me this tape, and I cannot find it anywhere now. It must have been scrubbed someplace. And I don't think she can find it either, but it had to do with Your buddy Lyndon Johnson, who used to call part of his body Jumbo, which evidently it was, one of the most disgusting creatures that's ever walked. He's on a phone with one of his good old boy Southern dudes, and Lyndon's going, "Can't win this war, can't win this war." And the guy goes, "Lyndon, nobody likes a loser, nobody likes a loser."
Yeah,
you know, and they sent 50,000 troops the next day to a war he knew he couldn't win. I mean,
they just, again, it became, and what are we going to do to win? change to what do we got to do to not lose to what do we got to do to save face.
Well, but there was an election coming up.
In the meantime, we were pumping people into a meat grinder.
Yeah, but if there's an election coming up, I mean, if there isn't a ring of hell just for that guy, I'm sorry I ever went to mass. Basically,
yeah. I tend to agree with you. Okay, so I want to raise one other issue for you, and this is we got a little time to talk about this. There's now a push in Congress by at least three dozen representatives that I'm aware of they've written a letter to the White House saying, you know what, we don't think it's a good idea that the President of the United States has the ability to respond to a nuclear attack or to order use of nuclear weapons. And we think that needs to be removed from him. And, I mean, their justification, of course, they don't reference Joe Biden. They reference Trump and they reference some other people, but they want the White House to basically change our command and control scheme so that the president is the guy who does not have the authority to order the use of nuclear weapons, either defensively or offensively. And it's the heart of our ability.
You're missing a piece here. You're missing a piece.
What's the piece I'm missing?
I think you're missing a piece, sorry. Somewhere in there, this concept of a declared war that only Congress can declare war has been lost for 50 years. I don't have a problem going back to that somewhat.
It was gone a long time ago. But why does the president have the authority in the first place? Do you know why?
Well, I think if you wiped out Congress like in the TV show, he probably should, but there's no way the guy, if somebody lobs a nuke this way, even if it takes 2 seconds, he should be able to get a declaration of war.
No, I don't think so. It's not 2 seconds, it's 30 minutes.
Okay.
Do you think you could get a declaration of war out of Congress in 30 minutes?
Well, we haven't even tried in so long, I wouldn't know.
Well, at 4 a.m., let's give you the nightmare scenario, and Hillary Clinton used this in one of her campaign ads. When the phone rings at 3 a.m., saying there are 500 missiles inbound over the North Pole. We've just detected an impact point for every major urban center in the United States. What are your options? Here are your options, and what do we do? Do you think at 3 a.m. you're going to be able to call Congress and say, oh, we need a quick meeting for a vote?
I'm going to say that if that happens, Lou, and with all the bazillions we've spent on satellites and everything else, if we've only got 30 minutes, if anybody survives, I want to hang them.
You're thinking like a Southside Chicago guy.
Well, that's what I am.
I got to be able to punch back. No, that's not the mentality. The right response is we have to maintain at least the impression that you may launch your missiles, but we're going to get ours off before yours land. And so even if you get your attack off, We will have the ability to destroy you as well. A mutual assured destruction. And that's what holds the balance of terror intact.
I get that part, but I'm saying I would like to actually have a constitutional convention. You know that. I want this defined as to who does what, when, and where. The idea that the president couldn't respond that fast, I'm with you. I also think that's one in a bazillion chance of happening.
It's much greater than that.
Okay, all right. So
and you need, again, I want you to go back to basic deterrence theory, you have the means to destroy the other side, the physical means.
I understand that.
And you have the will to use it.
I understand it. But what I'm saying is this whole who gets to do war stuff to other people is gotten so far away from the Constitution that all the right wingers lean on, right? I want a big discussion on both sides of the aisle.
This is a right wing issue. The Democrats are now funding the endless war
But the people who loved to push the limits of the president's authority to wage war were the neocons, and I would never accuse you of being one of those.
No, guys. I disagree. The War Powers Resolution was passed back in the 1980s to limit the ability of the president to get us into entanglements, and it's never, whether you have a Democratic Congress or a Republican Congress, it has never been exercised.
What I'm saying,
ever.
I want I would like the discussion to happen because I don't want Trump to be able to start something without Congress's approval unless, like you say, they're coming our way. And I don't want Biden to either. I don't want me. I don't want that authority if I was president. I think the idea of Congress declaring war makes sense. Now, yeah, if one's coming right at you, you're going to punch him back before you ask your mom for permission, right? We don't know that.
Most importantly, you have to maintain the impression that
yes.
you will do that.
Yes. I don't have a problem. But I'm saying, generally, that's not what's happened. We've had all kinds of other stuff happen. Right?
That's what they want to remove.
Well, that's
crazy. They want to remove the ability of the president to order a nuclear response or a nuclear strike without consulting whomever. And I would say that kind of situation is almost never going to happen. But the ability to do that.
The very narrow thing you're talking about, Lou, I agree with you 100%. What I'm saying is, I have problems with the whole rest of the stuff, all the wars we fought without ever a declaration.
No question. And I would point to you, the last illegal use of force that I can really clearly note was our attack on Libya back in whatever it was, 2010, which was absolutely illegal as far as I was concerned.
What about Grenada?
Grenada was at least backed by Congress later on. The Libya thing was not.
Really? Yeah, I don't remember that one too much, Lou. Hey, thanks very much, buddy. Good stuff. We will we'll talk again next week. You take care of yourself. And what are you having under your house?
Just some basement work.
That's because it's leaking or what? Or it's falling down?
No, it's getting refinished.
Oh, good for you. So you're not the handy dude. You got somebody doing all this for you.
The last thing you would want is me with a nail gun in my hand.
Oh yeah, you know, I've never used one of those. When I used to do all that stuff, you still use like a hammer. I would not even use one of those things. I still have my hammer.
Yeah.
So what if I showed up at a site with my hammer?
They're dangerous.
Well, so what if I showed up at a site with my hammer? Would I be like laughed out?
Probably, yeah.
God, take care of yourself, but SP Futures down 14, NASDAQ Futures down 137. Be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now. Right here, right now,
right now. Well, I'm up back, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ali. Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. SP Futures down 15 now. NASDAQ Futures down 137. Do we have Mr. Dan?
Yes.
David, I want you to send Dan my wiring instructions into the Stocks and Jacks account because I think we'll let him off with a dollar right now because I said, what, dollar 100, 1.5% by Memorial Day, and he said he'd bet me a dollar, and it's going to be there next week. What do you think, dude?
Yeah, you might be right.
Good day.
I hate to gloat early on a $1 bet, but, you know, what the hell? I might as well. It's probably like Duke and Duke.
Yeah, and whether it stays there is the other question. You know, how sustainable it is, but...
Oh, no, don't be like Powell on me and go, it's transitory. So what does that mean for you guys? What are you doing? I mean, obviously, if it wants to run up to, quote, normal, all of a sudden, everybody wants to be in your market and not so much the stock market. The world would be probably a little saner, I think.
Yeah, our market, is not just fixed income. I mean, we're in, on the equity side, we're in all the right industries right now. I mean, we're not in the momentum industry, so industrials, energy, utilities. This is a good environment for us, and the sort of the rotation, if you will, into these areas has been great. Bonds have really run their course in terms of, you know, looking at from the point of view of interest rate declines over the past decade. We have to remember that there has been a period of a year that impacted this cycle, and this is something that was based on an exogenous event, meaning the pandemic. But we were already on this course, and this is natural in the later stages of the business cycle to start seeing, first you see the steepening of the yield curve, then you see more flattening, and then you see that the following slowdown. So we're on fire right now. You want to stay away from bonds when there's concern about inflation. You want to stay away from long-term bonds in particular, and long-term would be 10-year, 20-year, 30-year bonds. The higher the credit quality, so when we're talking about, you know, government bonds, treasury bonds, agency bonds, high-grade corporate bonds, high-grade municipal bonds, they are all going to be impacted the most, and they're going to be impacted the most the longer the maturity. So our strategy has always been short-term high yield, keep the interest rate minimal as possible by staying on the short end of the curve. There are securities that you can buy in this environment, and we haven't mentioned this yet, but on the short end, should we see rate hikes, which is very likely going forward, buy floating rate notes. There are several floating rate note funds. The yields, your yield is going to, your coupon income, I should say, is going to reset every 6 months. So now you own a 6 month bond with a very low duration. So floating rate notes basically are going to benefit as interest rates go higher. So on the short end, you know, for 6 months, 1 year, if you have a floating rate note fund, if interest rates go up, you're going to participate. You're going to be able to participate, and you're not going to have to sell and buy again. So there's a few ETFs. FLRN is one of them that we like. BKLN is a bank loan fund, floating rate fund. You know, 6 months is the average duration. That means they reset these banks. They're variable note, and they reset every 6 months. This particular ETF, BKLN, has a dividend yield of 3.4%. So 3.4% on, you know, 6 months is a pretty big pickup. I think we're getting over 300 basis points. So that's those are some ideas of how to participate in a rising interest rate environment. The other is to stay clear of as I mentioned, the longer bonds. And there are people out there who need to participate. They need to do asset liability matching. They need to buy these longer term bonds, and they're finding, well, now finally we get some decent yield, but just wait a little longer because that yield, I believe, is going to continue to go up.
What I'm sure you're all over it. Well, first of all, I'm pissed at myself here. For my clients, I've done pretty well being short these bonds in this TLT, but I've got two toes in the water, and boy, oh boy, I should have the whole foot. I mean, I mean, yesterday it's going down so fast. I'm not even keeping up with it, Dan. I mean, in addition, the only good thing about going down so fast is winning the dollar from you.
Yes.
I mean, because yesterday I took off a winner and I put on the 41 time spread this week, next week, the puts, thinking, okay, I can make it to Friday. The thing won't be down to 40 to 41 tomorrow, and I can sit all week with those extra puts, trying to do it on the cheap. God's sake, the thing's 138.87 this morning.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't even, I'm lucky to, I'm probably up on it, but not very much, and surely not what I expected to have the whole week where I was just playing long the puts, hoping this would happen Monday or Tuesday. It's happening by the second here. All of a sudden,
right.
It, I mean, and then on top of that, correct me if I'm wrong, I use the term idiots. Are these idiots talking about a 1% transaction tax on bonds? What the hell does that do to you?
That would kill us with rates this low.
Yeah, no kidding.
That would definitely be hurtful with rates this low. But
I thought I saw a point.
I don't think that's been. I think that's just talk at this point.
This is the first time I ever had the fear that it's actually going to happen. These guys are going to find every way to get money out of people like us and our clients to pay for the people that they gave all the money to. Dan, your dog is going to have a tax on him, for God's sake. They're panicking here.
Yeah, and that could be a challenge, especially if people don't step back and realize that you know, because we're talking about retirement money for a lot of people. We're talking about money that runs businesses, small business owners, you know, so there hopefully there'll be some pushback. Same thing with the change in the capital gains tax, and that, you know, there's been a few things thrown out, you know, being thrown around about how those, you know, that's going to be affected, whether we're going to get a tax credit or whether we're going to lose the benefit of being in a 401k, you know. I'll believe it when I see it. I think there's going to be enough support not to go in that direction, because so many people at all levels of income rely on that tax advantage that you get from putting, you know, rely on that incentive, if you will, from the not having to pay penalties and not having to pay taxes on IRAs and 401ks. And it's probably one of the best and one of the few tax breaks that you get as an individual, one of the best when it comes to savings and investing. So hopefully we're not going to see any interruption in that. I know there had been talk early on in the Trump administration about, you know, taxing 401ks or taking away that tax benefit when they were eliminated some of the taxes. And I think, if I recall, Trump was the first to say, absolutely not. I mean, this is, and I think that was a wise move. And I'm hoping that people, you know, across the board realize that this is not the way to, you know, this is going to certainly kill savings. It's going to kill investment. Can put a, you know, I don't know that it helps. It certainly doesn't help in the long run.
Well, it also, Dan, it's the idea. I mean, we've seen, and I don't want to get off on this subject because you got better stuff to talk about. We've seen dramatic, I'll say, bifurcations in what people can do, and we prey on. How can I say this politically correctly? We prey on the. I'll be nice. The misinformed in the electorate, okay? How many people do you know? I mean, maybe you don't know that many that are plumbers, that are electricians, that are something. And if you're not in the union, you're paying your own hospitalization, right?
Right.
After tax. And yet, those people are not educated by anybody to say, "Whoa, you should be Dan Janitas Inc." And that way, it's tax deductible. How many people in this country do you think, I mean, by one being tax deductible to the other, are basically getting screwed? 20 million? 30? I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's a large, there's absolutely a large number. We've actually moved a lot of those independent contractors and, you know, small business owners. We have helped them get, you know, develop businesses, develop LLCs, you know, fund, SEP IRAs, you know, we've actually been able to help them, you know, realize that they have, you know, as a small business owner, they do have those benefits. But I think you're right. Unless you're working with an investment professional, it isn't a something that your accountant is necessarily telling you, and you're missing out. The bottom line, you're missing out of that.
Well, whenever you look at stuff like this, and it's kind of why I love talking to you, even to subjects I don't normally go to. I mean, the idea, if it was Dan Janitas Inc., you can set up your retirement plan and it's deductible for you.
Yes.
Now, so to say that somebody's IRA wouldn't be is so friggin' ignorant, I can't go there. Yet there's examples of it all over the place, right?
Yeah, I mean, it may be that you have to set up a small business, and depending on your client and what they're doing, if they're working for themselves, that wouldn't be too difficult unless those laws change as well. But I think a lot of this, hopefully a lot of this is just talk at this point. Speculation, and I know that a lot of this talk has gotten thrown around during the last administration and even prior to that. And, you know, it's going to be really important to have a spokesperson for those, you know, the small business owners who will be able to say, hey, you're not going to take these benefits away. You're not going to take this tax deduction. We need the incentive to be able to shelter some of our taxes, but then also to be able to put away some money for retirement, which is really important.
Well, I think what's happening, they have their cover here, Dan, and then we'll get off this topic. But actually, you're one of my contributors that I could talk about it directly with, because you know it more than the rest of the guys. The rest of the guys are lawyers and other kinds of stuff. It doesn't make them bad. It's just you're more knowledgeable in this area. They're going to use it. I mean, you and I have talked about the fabric of the market pretty much sucks in a lot of ways. Not so much in your bond area, but in the rest of it. I mean, you see what happens with GameStop again. I mean, come on. After the market closes, things up 100 bucks. I mean, there's not many players in the system. And you and I know that when you allow people to trade stock within the penny, preferred people, when you and I can't do it, I don't know if that happens in bonds, but within the penny, that actually what you're getting, you're getting probably, I won't say double the transactions you're supposed to have, but probably 40% more. Because somebody's going to sell it at 0.999, feel he's wrong, and he's going to buy it right away at even, right? So that's essentially a double transaction, where if you just would have let the first guy trade with the guy whose offer was there in the first place, your trade's out of there. So Congress knows there's something wrong. Now their cover this time is going to be, we'll put a, whatever it's going on there, I can't figure it out. I don't have time to dig into it too much. But by the way, it looks to me like if these idiots are making a hundredth of a penny, they don't understand what leaning against stuff or all this other stuff that you and I know means. They don't care. Sounds to me like if I put a 2 cent tax on it, this all stops. And by the way, I get a lot of money for it, and it's my cover for doing something I want to do for 40 years. And in some regards, they would stop it by doing that. You wouldn't get Citadel selling something at 0.999 to somebody and then turn around and buying it at even if they had to pay more than that for the transactions on each side. Right?
It's true, yeah.
So, I mean, it's a very ignorant way to solve a problem instead of just solving the problem. But that's much easier for these idiots to do than it is to say you can't trade within a penny, because they'll never do that, right?
Very unlikely. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, and you are right. We tend to stay away from what I would call anything that's momentum or speculative, or people trying to make money in an environment from trading. Without really having an understanding of what they're doing, just sort of following a hot lead, or just following what they think is the, and I really highly advise against that, because you really can get stuck. And you can get stuck if there is some regulation, or whether it be, a tax, penalty, or some benefit that's been taken away that an individual may not be aware of, and you don't want to find out about it until next year when you're doing your taxes. You want to know about that upfront when you're making the investment decision, which is why I think it always makes more sense to put money with financial advisors and investors who know these things and do these things all day long. Those trades are very speculative, and from my point of view, I think there's the knowledge that's required. You're not going to necessarily be able to learn on a YouTube video. It comes from experience. So it also comes from understanding the history of where things were. I mean, I think it's very important in our business to understand, how things have developed in this industry. It's not like you can turn a switch and all of a sudden now we have this new environment and it's going to be really favorable for momentum or short-term investors. That's not the case. Cutting commissions was one way that I think, you know, I think a lot of retail investors thought at that point, oh, wow, now we can, like, trade all we want, and we can, you know, this is going to be beneficial to day trading. But what they're not realizing is that there are other costs involved in this, and they're not necessarily paying close attention to the tax implications if they're trading those on taxable accounts. So there are other, you know, I think this is a, you know, our business is one where experience and gray hair makes sense. You know, you really need to have seen this happen and this type of thing happen in the past. And of course we've seen this type of thing happen, and just to be aware of it, have both eyes open. And the environment we're in right now with what's going on with you know, the Fed potential moves coming up soon, higher rates, you know, the sort of acceleration in rates. This is the time we really need to be paying attention as money managers. We need to be focused on, you know, how these moves are impacting our clients' portfolios. And we need to stay in securities and stay in investments that are not going to necessarily be whipped around, or I think they use the word whipshod to describe the ARC funds. You know, where you have so much leverage and so much concentration in a particular area, but then you have a wide number of people pulling out as things don't look favorable, and then you have something trade down significantly more than probably would have if you didn't have this mass exodus. So we, you know, as we've mentioned before, one of our top stock picks, and I'll repeat it because they actually had earnings, fantastic earnings last night, is Thunderbird. And
oh, cool. You've been talking about those guys for a while.
Yeah, they're still trading over the counter. THBRF is their over-the-counter symbol, or you can buy it on the Toronto Stock Exchange using Canadian dollars, TBRD. They are in the process of getting listed on a national exchange here, and I think they're going to see a big bump. But just to give you
done the Canadian dollar route. Now, of course, if you're going to buy it in Toronto, it's a two-step right. Transactions. Have you,
yes.
And, you know, I mean, have you either had a really good experience with that or a really bad one where somebody all of a sudden bought the Canadian dollars at, you know, 98 cents and 6 months later they're 84, or the other way around? Have you ever, I mean, normally I think you probably end up okay, but have you ever gotten skunked or just really rewarded when you didn't deserve it?
Well, now we have the option of buying, you have the option of buying the over-the-counter or buying the Canadian, so we'll tend to buy the Canadian when it's, you know, when the currency is in our favor, the currency transaction, so we actually time it
that makes sense.
You know, if we're interested in participating. I would recommend buying when the Canadian dollar is strong relative to the U.S. dollar. I would recommend buying the over-the-counter, the THBRF.
Where do you consider the Canadian dollar? I don't watch it that much. And last time I was there was a while ago. But where do you consider it strong versus weak?
You know, it fluctuates around 30. You know, 30 or 130 if you take it. If you kind of
it's worth like 80 cents to the buck. One Canadian
dollar to a dollar, right? So if it goes to like 125. You know, or if it goes to 135, that's sort of the range right now.
Didn't it get like over a buck once in the last 10 years? Wasn't it right at the dollar? It was like equivalent?
Anyway, it has gotten closer. So obviously the closer it gets to the dollar, the less attractive it is.
Right, right. Because I don't even know the extremes. That's what I'm asking. I have a feeling it got near a buck. What's the lowest it's been? Like 82 or something? 82 cents?
I think so. I mean, I don't know if it's gotten down. I think it may have gotten down for like a moment, but the range that it tends to trade in is more in the, you know, 25 to 35 range, 25 to 30%. You pay a 25 to 30% premium to have the Canadian dollars, to own the Canadian dollars. So it's, we're looking to get in. We're going to time it. You know, we're looking at where they've been at the particular moment in time. There has been a lot of volatility. One of the reasons for that is what's going on with commodities right now. And with the U.S. dollar right now, which I think is really significant, but the better play right now is to be in the over the counter, and then the much better play will be to be on the when it's listed on national exchange, and we see that coming very soon.
I don't really have a way to play it. Maybe you do, but I get these reports every morning. Obviously, I can't imagine that this that this European number, this 10-year European, is not positive by Memorial Day. I mean, look at the Japan is 0.13, for God's sake. I never thought that it would get there. I mean, how does the European, I mean, who over there is still buying stuff at the prices to keep it negative?
Yeah, it's in some of it's regulation. You know, there certain funds are required to buy their own to buy their own securities. So our dollar, I think the other thing that we know, and I've talked about this, is one of the balancing effects of the, you know, the concerns about higher rates. And I know Powell touched on this as well. Is there will still be demand, and as interest rates, you know, say the 10-year and et cetera, continues to go up, there will be buyers stepping in, and as buyers step in, both U.S. and overseas, that will put pressure on the yield. So, rates aren't going to go, if there's a huge number of when there's buying, that's good news for the price, and, you know, the inverse relationship between price and yields will come down as this happens. So we don't know the exact point that it's going to hit. It may hit, some of it may hit at 1.5 on the 10-year. More of it will hit at 2. And then on the flip side of that is looking at those companies that are going to be negatively impacted. And obviously the whole world is concerned, as you can see what's happened in the early days of this week with a lot of the NASDAQ names and the tech names, which will be impacted negatively. But, the great news about our business and about the economy is that there are winners and losers. There are companies that will benefit from higher rates.
Oh,
financials,
sure.
Utilities, and a lot of industrials, energy companies, which have had a nice run in here. And so that's where the rotation, that's where staying diversified, that's where staying one step ahead. That's where protecting your interest rate risk in your portfolio from a bond point of view is very important. So we're not in and have not been in the long-term treasuries, nor would we recommend that anytime soon. But
well,
there
Dan,
will be a point
you...
where the buyers were going to step in, and you know that just from trading the market when that's coming, and it hasn't quite come yet. But I think the Europeans are going to be in buying the U.S., treasuries at some point again.
Well, I think he's, you know, we know from a monetary standpoint, or from a competitive standpoint, as the prices go down on the bonds, you're gonna sneak out a few buyers, right? But like Paul said, and like you just said, but how do you? I mean, the thing that has concerned me now for 10-12 years is you just said it. I mean, you say it much more nicely than I do. There's no way on earth you're going to charge a guy a fee to buy a bond for 10 years that's not paying any interest. First of all, the guy's going to come at you with a knife, and secondly, you would never do it. So at some point here, I mean, even now that we're up to 1.4 on these things, and it looks like I got my bet in hand, we're still talking about, I've gotten stuff from listeners where they've redone some of the inflation numbers, and they're talking 6.5% right now. So I don't see how... You would never, I don't believe, I would never, unless I'm getting over 6.5% for my money next year, why would I ever loan it to somebody if I'm getting it back and it's worth less than I gave it to them for? I mean, in the last 12 years, what it's taught people, not you because you stayed away from it, it's taught people that you somehow can make really dumb transactions for people. I mean, there's no way the inflation rate in Europe was minus 0.6. So every time you bought one of those things, unless you thought the Lone Ranger was coming over to, you know, the hill and is going to buy it from you higher, it's just a horrible investment. And I don't know how you base society on horrible investments, I guess is my question.
It's a good exercise. I think I may have mentioned this before, that my mentor in the business told me when I first started to put together a portfolio of bonds that would not perform well. And it's a challenge, but I think it's a good it sort of forces you to think about the risks and how the risks are going to play themselves out. And again, interest rate risk and inflation are the enemies, if you will, of the bond market investor. And when the trend is turning up for interest rates, that's when you really want to stay on the sidelines. You want to look at some of the other options that I've mentioned, preferred stock, if you're looking for yield, preferred stock, floating rate notes, dividend, some high dividend paying stocks. And move out of that area for the time being. Short-term high yield, short-term emerging markets are all good investments now too. But if yield is your you know, your goal or your objective, you're going to be killed on interest with interest rate risk when we see the rates continue to rise. The other thing I've mentioned that I just want to mention again is just for people, we have gotten into a world that is so short-term focused. I mean, instantaneous messages on your phone telling you moment by moment what's going on, and it's this sort of myopic view, or this view that's just focused on what's going on day to day. We're forgetting about the longer term trends. And one thing that a lot of equity investors are not aware of or don't understand clearly is the credit cycle. And the credit cycle was interrupted by COVID. We were reaching, as of like a year, year and a half ago, we were reaching the mature part of the business cycle. And when we're at the mature part of the business cycle, everything looks great. Yield curve is positive. And then as inflation starts stepping in, for whatever reason, prices, you know, asset prices have been inflated, consumer demand increases, unemployment declines, we start seeing inflation, then we start seeing that natural tendency of the yield curve flattening, slow growth, et cetera. Well, we've had this year that, you know, it's sort of been a hiatus for the last 12 months that's taken us out of the natural course, and now I believe we're back on that course again going forward, and we cannot forget that we're still coming off of a 10-plus year positive bond market, if you want to look at it like that, or a bond market that is interest rates have continuously gone down. That credit cycle is still going to turn, and I believe we're in that turning point right now. We're in that shift where the demand picks up, where every, you know, prices go up, we see inflation across the board, we see, and so this is just part of the macroeconomic, credit cycle, and these are the things that happen, and the things that happen are higher rates, inflation, scared of bondholders getting concerned, and, I still believe in those trends. I mean, the technology may have, and productivity may have expanded the last expansion we've had here, but I think there's going to be a slowdown at some point. It may not come anytime soon. It may not come this year, but that's the natural tendency.
They start ramping these taxes up. Why do you say it's a 10-year and not a 40-year? Because really it's been since August of 82.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at the much longer-term trend it has, rates have continuously come down. These sort of short-term blips. I think I look at what happened in 08 as a correction in the credit cycle that was truly a correction in the credit cycle because it was mortgage rates, mortgage securities that actually were involved. This time, the more recent correction we had was in the markets was based on a pandemic, not necessarily a financial.
Dan, we're gonna have to hold that part of the story until next week, bud. We're running over only because it's good stuff, but thank you very much, buddy.
And, sure.
It's Dan Janitas of Kratos Capital, and SP Futures down 13, NASDAQ Futures down 118. Bonds are the story, though. Wow, 1.4 something. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks Jacks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. Second, we'll have Mr. Frank Fahey, back by popular demand, I might say, to talk about market shenanigans last night, Frank, and I just put a short bond position on, and the darn things are down so far that screwing my position, and this 8 hours ago, for God's sake. S&P futures down 1075, NASDAQ futures down 104, Dow futures down 19, because I've been having winners one after another, and they're on the cheap, and that's what happens when you go on the cheap sometimes. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 26.2%, FTSE up 19.2%, CAC around up 27 cents flat. So let's just say Europe is a nothing this morning. Asia, Nikkei up 498. These guys were down yesterday. Up 496, 1.7%. Shanghai up 20.6%. Hang Seng, that was down and not done, is now down the U-turn to the upside. Up 355, 1.2. They've been violent pretty much every day over there. So we have review. Dow Jones up 424 yesterday. S&P 500 up 44. NASDAQ up 132. So we're giving some of that back to them. I mean, the NASDAQ more than the other. The Dow has obviously had individual stocks that are just going to the moon. Caterpillar and I don't know what every season Boeing this week. But what they see is, well, we'll talk about this with Frank a little bit. It's hard to value stocks when you're in the group that the government will never let go down. And they'll throw any number of $1 billion, these companies, to keep them up even when they shouldn't be. Bonds, but here's the story of the day. 1.44%. 10-year to Bund is minus 0.25, heading towards zero. Japan, positive 0.14. Man, oh, man, I've been doing a show a long time. I haven't seen it up that high. Oil, flat now on both spots. Brent is 66.96. West Texas, 63.16. Natural gas up 3 cents, 283. RBOB down a penny, 188. We've got gold down 17. Not sure why gold is flying down like this. I know it's an interest rate sort of play, but it's also an inflation play, and it's strange. Silver up 2 cents, copper up 3 cents, and we've got crypto, which we forgot to give the first time. Bitcoin back up to 51,319, 2404. It's up last night, and all the rest of these guys, I don't even know what the hell they are. Ethereum, XRP, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, they're all up. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. 7:38 in Chicago. In traffic this morning, traffic building aggressively, especially on the Kennedy construction and Eisenhower Road construction. There's an earlier accident cleanup, Superior at North State Street, and there's also an accident Thorndale Avenue at Supreme Drive. Today, the weather in Chicago currently is 30 and sunny. Today's high, 40 degrees and sunny. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 50 and clear, and they'll have a beautiful sunny 72 and sunny degree day. In sports, the NBA, the Bulls, beat the Timberwolves in OT, 133-126. Suns lose to the Hornets, 124-121. NCAA, DePaul loses to number 12, Creighton, 77-33, and we have a few games tonight.
77-33.
I'm sorry, 53.
Oh. That's bad enough.
Illinois takes on Nebraska tonight. Northwestern plays Minnesota. Washington at ASU and Washington State at University of Arizona. We have baseball spring training, Cactus and Grapefruit Leagues this weekend. White Sox, Milwaukee, Cubs versus Padres, Arizona, Colorado. And last but not least, our Blackhawks play Columbus tonight, and they are doing very well. Back to you, Chief.
How many times are we going to play Columbus?
They play two games in a row. They rotate. That's how they change the game. But they play them quite a bit this year.
Well, it's because they're not playing anybody in Canada. They're not playing anybody out of division.
Right. So you'll see them playing them. They are playing very well for a young team.
Here's a trivia question for you. Who do the Globetrotters play all the time?
Washington Generals.
Yeah. Remember that? Wow.
Yeah, I'm showing my age, aren't I?
Oh, yeah, I used to love watching those guys.
I'm sure Franklin knows that, too.
What do you mean, Frank? Frank knew the
team
before.
They started in Wells Park in Chicago.
Really?
Yes.
You know,
Globetrotters, not the Generals.
You know who played for the Globetrotters? Bob Gibson.
Believe it or not.
Bob was a hell of an athlete, in addition to being an unreal pitcher. Did you hear... I saw this thing last week with Joe Torre. They asked him about Bob Gibson, that he caught him in the All-Star game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he went out to talk to him about, you know, a pitch he wanted, and Bob refused to talk to him because he had a Cardinal uniform, or he had another uniform on. He had like whatever he was playing for. He wouldn't talk to anybody who wasn't on his team, even in the All-Star game. It sounds like something Frank would do. What do you think, Dave?
Nah, Frank wouldn't do that.
Me not talking.
That's true. So, Frank, we didn't get a chance to commiserate. Do you believe the crap that went on in the clothes last night with these crazy stacks with the GameStop and the Nokia and all the rest of this stuff?
No, I mean, I don't. It's silly. And now there's a number of penny stocks that are most active. Sundial, Naked.
Well, yeah, I got a big position. That's SNDL. That's one of my nice winners. Believe it or not.
Except it can double in price and commissions. I'll lead up the.
Yeah, we're good. But I got an issue with this AMC. I put two butterflies on, and were a couple of my more imaginative trades in a while. And now the thing just blew through both butterflies. I mean, I'll probably still be all right on them, but can't this ever be easy? I mean, what the hell? And I didn't tell you the story about the Nokia. One of our friends was a client, tried to sell some. He bought a bunch of the fours earlier in the week, right, when the stock's down 385. And so he buys these things. Stock creeps up. So now he's selling the near-term fours against it, which is the right thing to do. And he tries to sell some at 12 when it's 10-11. We get them filled at 12 somehow. You know, we do a pretty good job on fills, but not usually like that. So then last night, I couldn't have been 10 minutes later, the calls go out 18-19. I'm going, how did that happen? The stock's still 403. The stock's not up at all, right? So he calls in a panic. Why are these things all the way up? I said, I don't know, but they are up. And so now he says, well, buy me 2,500 shares. I go, okay. So I said to my man JD, he says, see if you can get these things after the close, right? So we buy 2,500 shares. The thing's 403, 404. Guess what we get filled?
402.
How the hell that happened, I have no idea. Now this morning it's...
Well, there's always that dark market that you don't see.
Well, now they're 429. With the call's 18-cent bid, what manner of moron sold it to us at 402?
Well, right now it's showing 571 at 575.
For what? Nokia? Not Nokia. No, Nokia's trading...
NOK? Is that NOK? Nokia?
NOK is trading 429.
Why do I have...
Oh, it's up 25 cents.
571, no, 575. That's what it is on...
I'm still looking at it. It's actively trading on Bloomberg. I'm not on Bloomberg.
I'm sure it is. It's showing it only up 3 cents, so there's something screwy.
Something screwy there. But if this all happened, GameStop, I went through the numbers earlier. I'll do it again real quick. GameStop has roughly 70 million shares outstanding. Stock's up $100 since yesterday afternoon. So that's, what is that? $7 point something billion, right? It just went up in market cap. They've never made a dime, Frank. And probably are never going to. They lost $18 million last quarter, $100 million the quarter before that. What do people even look at this, look at what they're buying when they buy this stuff?
I don't know. It seems that they do not.
Name me, what did Mr. T say? I pity the fool. Explain to me anybody who would pay $7 billion for that company.
I don't know. They're talking up the fact that the guy who owns Chewy is on the board of directors and is the biggest private holder right now. But then again, Chewy hasn't made money either.
I don't know. If I could put you on the board of something where I just buy all the stock and it doubles because Frank Fahey goes on the board. I mean, this whole thing with the... plus, I'd never want to be in a position where Frank Fahey tossed his CEO stock doubles. You know, I mean, what a day that would be. You get canned and the stock goes up. That's a bad day.
Oh, only if you don't hold options.
Well, if you have the stock, I suppose
the president.
You don't care. Yeah, those, I'm sure those guys they have no morals like that. They don't care as long as the stock went up. They don't care if they're getting canned causes to go up. They're probably fine with it. You know, I'd be upset with it. Chief Lee's PTI doubles in value. I would think that's a bad day, even though I own a lot of PTI. What can I tell you, right? So what do you make of this, Frank? I was telling Dan Janitas that I bet him a dollar that we'd be 1.5 by Memorial Day. It looks like we're going to be there like tomorrow in the 10-year rate.
Oh, yeah. You said that to me last week, too.
But this is crazy.
I didn't bet you because you're pretty good on bonds.
Well, I'm not so good on... We made good money on our TLT position, which is a ETF of 20-year-plus bonds. So it's the security side equivalent to a bond, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday, I had the 43.5, 42.5 that I had on for a credit. So I sold that. I made some good money on that, although not near as big as I should. Of course, have you ever done a winner as big as you should have, I guess is the question. So I said, you know what?
Tom, you're a trader, not a speculator.
Well, this one... I plan on making some money with these things going up because I've going down with interest rates going up. So the thing goes back to 142, right? So I buy the 41 calendar spread next week, this week, and I go, I'm really going to be slick with this. There's a Southside term, right? I'm going to be slick. It's going to creep down a little bit on Friday. I'm going to let my shorts expire worthless, and I'm going to stick with the longs next week. And I'm into them for basically half price because I did the calendar spread, and I'm going to be... have my cake and eat it too. You know what the piece of crap is now? Oh, it's actually coming back up. It's 139.45. It was down to 138 something already the first day, 5 hours. It was 142 when I did it. And this TLT, these bonds, this is a ETF that like never moves for like months on end. Well, now it's moving, and I'm sitting there going, how am I gonna? I'm not gonna make any money at 138. It went down way too fast for me. That's what happens when you try and do something on the cheap. Frank, what is going on here? I mean, Powell goes on and to my mind, made a big fool out of himself saying, I don't care what you guys tell me, how much inflation's out there. No, there isn't. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. And oh, by the way, I'm printing more money tomorrow. I'll see you. Was that basically the nature of his speech?
Yes, question? Exactly.
That's interesting. And then we have all the senators and people trying to act like they know something, which they don't. I mean, you know, God, why do those... Do they think they actually sound decent on TV when they ask these insane questions? Or do they hope there's constituency doesn't pay attention?
Well, they don't come up with the questions on their own, I don't think. I think they probably have aides that come up with it.
Probably.
So they need better aides.
Well, remember when our buddy Pedro got bounced from Janet Yellen's news conference because he asked a question she didn't like?
Well, that's the political way now.
Yeah.
Point where both sides do it.
But the guy was working for the Journal. You would think the Journal would say, my guy gets to ask whatever he wants, but they back down. Does any of these people stand up to these people?
Well, come on, media's hanging on by their fingertips. What are the three reporters for the Tribune right now?
I'll tell you what, the newspaper, and I can't believe the cost of it. Used to get a real paper when I was a kid. I would get it from my grandfather. You got a real paper for 7 cents. David, what's the lowest you ever saw the price of the Tribune?
When I was delivering it?
When you were delivering it, was it like 10 or 15?
I think it was a little high. I mean, yeah, you're probably right. That's where it was.
I don't know. When I was real young, and I used to get it from my grandfather. It was 7 cents. I never saw it below that. But what's the Sunday Trib is what, like $3.50 or something? $3?
Yes.
And it's what? A tenth of the size it used to be?
I used to pay, within the past 10 years, I had a special deal where I paid $10 a month. No, $12 a month for the Trib to be delivered.
I still get the Sunday delivered, and it's like $10 a month.
Zip code.
I get the Anaheim and the Sunday for, I think, $10 a month. Something
that's
like that.
Pretty good.
Yeah. All right, so Frank, we're long-term investor. I'm going to say a boatload of money to put to work with some new clients. And I'm all over the place trying to do some of these spreads where I'm getting sneaky long in all these areas. I just can't bring myself to pay 20 some vol for put insurance out 3 months and buy this stuff at this level. I'm sneaking my way in because I know everybody wants to be long. I can't do it, Frank. I mean, the price of protection, and rightfully so, is just too high.
Definitely. If you look where this VIX is now and where it used to be, the VIX future, it appears support now is 20, not 10.
Well, what do you make of it? I mean, I know you were on the trade.
Which means there's volatility. The implied volatility is doubled.
Well, right. It is absolutely doubled. And it is so scary when I talk about 1999. I mean, you traded in some real stocks on the floor. And I traded in the OEX, and it was the top 100 stocks, and that was essentially my world, right? And your world was your stocks that you traded, even though you had stuff outside your pit, and all these companies that were going from zero to 100, like a race car, I didn't even know who the hell they were, and I was just astounded looking at these places, and I go, did they make any dough? No, they just bought 1-800 Flowers or something. Like, what does that even mean? I mean, I remember being on a show on. What was I on? I wasn't on Accent Expert. I was on something else. They're asking me on TV. They go, "What do you think of like all the click-throughs and stuff?" And I said, "I can't even fathom it. I can't imagine walking into Marshall Fields before Macy's and them giving me the stuff for free just because people had banners lit on the ceiling. They're advertising other places." I said, "I don't even know how you go there if you don't make a profit on what you sell and all you're doing is directing people to other people." So how is that a game that everybody can get in on? Because if nobody pays anybody except to send somebody somewhere else where they don't pay, so how does that even catch any traction? I mean, I never could understand. But right now, I mean, as you know, I'm doing stuff for a couple other people for the Protected program, and God, these guys are calling me up. I also give them option advice on I got this one, where should I roll it to? I mean, they need people like us, Frank. Everybody's, because we've been doing this for so long. And I'll say, what do these guys even do? It's trading like 250. Oh, yeah, I bought it at like 60 6 months ago. Really? I'm like,
sell it.
I'm like, well, how do I, how do I manage to not have any of these things? I mean, because my clients don't have any of this stuff, so I don't really look at it. I mean, they've got, I will use the term real stocks, but hey, if you buy something at 60 and you can sell it for 200, it's real enough, right? I mean,
So yeah, Pfizer's $33.75.
Yeah.
Go figure.
I think that the Pfizer's of the world, that the COVID has caused so much. I mean, you and I discussed, God, months ago, Frank, that one of the biggest people just in the midst of this, COVID hero nurse thing, and I'm not debating anything, I was saying is the biggest layoffs other than the hospitality industry and maybe airlines or someplace was hospitals, because they shut down all the elective surgery and the cath labs and everything else. So, hospitals were like a half or third staff for a while. They were only, because these other people weren't there all the daytime, the elective surgery wasn't there. And I think that some of the drugs that they use on that other stuff are way more accretive to the bottom line
than
the COVID stuff. And I think people aren't showing up for a chemo. I think all kinds of stuff happened, for those 6-8 months. And I think The other stuff is that they really make the money on, I think, must be down, or else why would the stock be down? I mean, I said, well,
I have no idea, but that makes an awful lot of sense. I didn't look at that. And as long as we're giving shout-outs, I'd like to mention that the Pfizer plant that is making it and developed this used to be Upjohn.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, Upjohn was based in where?
Kalamazoo.
Kalamazoo, yeah.
You know, our most of it seems like an awful lot of the pharmaceutical companies were bought by European pharmaceuticals.
And Pfizer, their biggest, if I recall, I'll try and get my brain working.
They're in New Jersey, but I forget who they are associated with.
You know what their first big shot was? They were one of the first people to mass produce penicillin.
Wow.
I mean, talk about going back. Every one of these guys had like an original drug, remember? I mean, when you think about it. But just what you were talking about, I'm going to try and get these up here as soon as I can find my Wikipedia.
In South Bend, Elkhart, we had Miles Laboratories, which was bought by Bayer.
You almost have to be old like you two guys to remember these companies. Because, I mean, remember Squibb? You had Upjohn. We had all these places that were all bought by other people, right? And most of them are these companies. But the thing is, they were not small companies. You know, they were big enough. And one of the teachers I had in college was Milton Friedman. He actually thought that after a certain period of time, let's put it this way: if Fahey Inc. gets to a huge size, that there actually is a size at which it hurts you to get bigger. That it's not all, but the idea that if two companies both have 50,000 employees, that if they get together, it may actually be less efficient. And I think that a lot of these companies that were bought, I think that Upjohn, I think Squibb, I think those places were actually big enough where I'm not so sure that it was a big plus for them to be taken over by somebody else.
No, and it was a huge negative for the towns.
Oh, sure.
Bayer went to close down everything associated with Miles Labs, and then we had the pandemic, and now they're thinking of not closing down because they like having a more diversified locations.
Well, I know that they were
cheaper for people to work at home in South Bend than it is in New Jersey.
Well, one of the listeners to the show and a client, his parents live up there, and his dad was trying to get like concrete for like a driveway, and the concrete guy said, "We don't have any concrete for a while because Pfizer is buying it all for this new facility because they've got to keep this stuff 70 below zero," which now they decide they don't need to, right?
Yeah, that's sort of comforting because that means that at least they're approaching it from a conservative side. It's also good to hear about Johnson & Johnson. That's part of the rally right now. It looks like we may be opening up a couple months earlier than we thought.
Well,
I mean, a year ago, the president said, "Hey, we have COVID under control."
Yeah, well,
I think we may be just starting to finally see the light at the end of the tunnel.
I know you're somewhat of a, I won't say anything bad about you, Frank, but shall we say an observer of these vaccines. If I was to go get a vaccine today, which I don't think I need because I just had COVID recently, if I were to go, why would I want, it looks to me like people are surviving the Pfizer. And some people I know have gotten the Moderna. Most people have gotten the Pfizer. What possessed me, even with 4 months of the other guys being, I'll say, okay, we don't know long term. We hope they're all okay. Why would I want to get the Johnson & Johnson one today? If I had my choice, why would I get that one? I know the other ones are working okay.
You tend not to have a choice. My wife ended up with Pfizer, and I ended up with Moderna. And so when you're presented with the opportunity, you take what's given to you.
Okay.
And that's the way I approach it. There's a massive amount of relief in getting that shot.
I agree. And I, I did see, real quick, for those that maybe weren't listening yesterday, some of the stuff I get on the COVID is from Europe, and they've been, in Britain, they've been inoculating the people over age 65. Well, after like 10 weeks of this, the amount of new COVID cases in people 65 and over is dropping precipitously. So it is working, and working pretty strong. And it,
well, the villages have to be excited.
Well, but of course, here you don't see. I don't know why. Are we shoving all the statistics under the rug here, or does anybody only come up with stuff if they're making money in it? That's a long question. Right,
it's inconsistent, the statistics.
Yes.
But I think that we're down to about a 3.5 rate right now.
Right, but we really want to see the people that have been vaccinated dropping like a rock compared to other people, right? Then we know it's working. All right, Frank.
Nobody's dropping like a rock right now.
In
maybe in California and
no, I'm
Arizona.
Saying in Britain and Europe, the people who have been vaccinated, that age group has been dropping like a rock, which is what you want to have happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is happening, is what I'm saying.
Well, so, I thought you meant dying.
No.
The rate of infection.
The rate of infection is driving. It's going straight down. So
yeah, it note. Is. It appears to be that way, and everybody independently came out and did a pretty darn good job. This mRNA virus seems to be something pretty amazing from concept to the first shot.
When are you going to declare yourself?
It works.
When are you going to declare yourself okay and take David and I like to breakfast or something?
We're listening.
I haven't had my second shot yet.
See, it's always going to be the second shot, then 2 weeks, then there'll be a third shot. It's just out there, David.
Well, right now, Moderna says they're coming up with a booster. So,
well, it's because they want to get more money.
I'll probably have to wait for the booster.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, the guy, he never saw a check he wanted to pick up, did he, David, this guy?
Oh, I've picked up more than my fair share in my life.
Take care of yourself, Frank. We'll talk to you on Monday. I'll talk to you before then. SP Futures down 13, NASDAQ Futures up 118. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.